You may think that you've had the world's strongest coffee, but unless you've had the electric chair blend from Reaper's Brew, well then, my friend, you have not had the world's strongest coffee. There have been days where I needed the energy and motivation to get going, whether it was to work on my podcast or just be productive in general, and Reaper's Brew coffee definitely did wonders for me. To get some Reaper's Brew coffee for yourself, just go to reapersbrew.com and receive 10% off of your first order when you enter in the coupon code UNKNOWNPOD. Again, visit reapersbrew.com and enter in the coupon code UNKNOWNPOD at checkout for 10% off of your first order.
Hi guys, my name is Miles and I wanted to tell you about my true crime podcast, Forensic Miles. My co-host Sean and I investigate the cases in every episode of Forensic Files. You've seen the show, you know the crime, but is there more to the story? Let's find out. Check us out on Instagram at Forensic Miles, Miles with a Y, and listen to us wherever you listen to podcasts. See you there.
There's a chance you've heard someone on the internet recount their encounter with a black-eyed child. There are many stories out there, but they all share many of the same details. Someone has an unexpected encounter, either at home or in their car, from a child ranging in age from approximately 6 to 17 years old. Sometimes they're in pairs, and sometimes there's only one of them. But they all have the same objective. They want you to let them inside. And their eyes are bottomless pools of blackness. You don't want to let them in, but you're also paralyzed by fear and an overwhelming sense of dread. You're not exactly sure what they want from you. You only know that whatever it may be, it's going to turn out horrible for you. So no matter what, don't let them in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Halloween-themed episode of the Still Unknown podcast. I am Joe Schwartz, the host of this podcast, and I thought I would do something fun for this episode for the week of Halloween and talk about one of my favorite paranormal stories, The Legend of the Black-Eyed Children, or Black-Eyed Kids, whichever you prefer to call them. There are some questions on what their exact origins are, and I will explore the different theories in this episode. But one thing is for sure, regardless of what exactly they are or where they come from, their mere presence is enough to strike fear in the heart of any who may be unlucky enough to encounter them. Now, aside from stories about the black-eyed children shared on the internet, I want to acknowledge here that I use two books as my primary sources of research here, and they are Black-Eyed Children by David Weatherly, which is considered the most definitive book on black-eyed children, as well as The Chilling True Terror of the Black-Eyed Kids, by G. Michael Vassy, which is available for free if you have a Kindle Unlimited subscription. So now get ready as we explore the legend of the black-eyed children. It's widely acknowledged that the first known encounter with black-eyed children was a story from a reporter from Abilene, Texas, named Brian Bethel. His encounter occurred in 1996, with his story becoming public 2 years later, but I'll get back to that in a moment, because there are accounts of encounters with black-eyed children that go back many years further. The earliest known account actually occurred in 1950. This story takes place in Virginia and involves a 16-year-old boy named Harold who was walking home from school one day when he came across another teenage boy. The boy appeared as if he was just waiting around for someone. And when Harold greeted the boy, he remained silent. Harold just decided to shrug it off and continued on his route home. When suddenly the boy said to him, "I want to go to your house. You're going to walk me up to your house." Harold was taken aback. Who did this kid think he was? It was then that Harold looked into the boy's eyes and saw only blackness. Harold was about to turn and run when the boy said something else, as if he could read Harold's mind. "Now don't you run away from me. You're going to walk me up to your house." Harold ignored the boy and turned and ran home. As he did, he heard a scream come from the boy. A scream, he later said, sounded like a bobcat. Harold made it home and never encountered the other boy again. While there were claims of more encounters over the decades, the phenomenon first gained attention in 1998 with an account posted on the internet by Brian Bethel. In his book, The Chilling True Terror of Black-Eyed Kids, G. Michael Vassy attributes this being credited as the first known account due to the internet taking off around the same time, making it possible to share stories such as this. Brian Bethel was a journalist from Abilene, Texas, who mostly covered news involving the city council. One night in 1996, Brian suddenly realized that he had a last-minute bill due and left to take care of the errand. The place where he was to drop the bill off was just a 10 to 15 minute drive away, so he figured it wouldn't take long. He arrived at the parking lot, which was empty, with the only light coming from the marquee of the nearby movie theater. The whole setting had a naturally eerie feel to it, but Brian chose not to focus too much on that, instead aiming all of his attention on his checkbook while filling out the check to pay his bill. Then he heard a sudden knocking on his driver's side window. Startled, he looked up to see two young boys in hoodies. He estimated one boy to be about 14 years old, while the other was around 9. The younger one stayed silent, while the older, taller one did all of the talking. "Hey, mister, we left our money at home and we want to see the movie. Can you drive us to our mother's house? Come on, it won't take long." Brian noticed on the marquee that the movie playing was Mortal Kombat, and its last showing for the night had begun some time before. He figured by the time he would drive the kids to wherever the house was and back, the movie would just be about over. And something was off with the two boys. The way the older one was speaking doesn't sound like how a typical teenage boy would talk. Almost robotic, or like an alien trying to imitate a human. The whole situation felt unnerving to Brian, and it was about to get even more so with the boy's next remark. "It's not like we have a gun or anything." And that's when he saw them, coal black eyes. Brian stammered out an apology, saying that he couldn't help the boys. The younger one appeared confused, while the older one became more aggressive, knocking hard on the window saying, "We can't come in unless you say it's okay. Let us in." Brian quickly hit the gas and drove out of the parking lot. As he was leaving, he stole a quick glance in his rearview mirror, but the two boys had vanished. And as far as paying his bill goes, I suppose he just willingly accepted the late fee for it. While Brian Bethel's encounter occurred while he was in his car in an empty parking lot, the common encounter with the black-eyed kids tends to be at one's residence, with them following the formula of this encounter featured in G. Michael Vassy's book, submitted by a man named Keith W. It was around 8 p.m., and it was starting to get dark out. My power went off and on a few times. That's never happened before. We usually have stable electricity. Around 8:20, I heard deep knocking at my front door. I went over to the door, turned on my porch light, and looked through the little hole on the door, but it was just pitch black, even though the light was on. I don't know why, but I was extremely terrified. I started to put my hand on the handle and I asked, "Who's there?" Some kid answered, "Sorry to bother you, but we are lost and need to borrow your phone." "I have a spare cell phone you can borrow for a few minutes," I told them. "Let me go get it and I'll come outside with you." The kid just said, "No, you let me in right now." And he started banging on my door. I'm not talking about just hitting it, but it was something very big and wide was smashing against my door. I said, "You quit that right now. I've got a gun, and if you try anything, I will shoot you." The kid kept screaming, "Let me in now. You're making a mistake." I grabbed my gun and held it off to the side of my leg. I put my hand on the lock and unlocked the door. This is where I made my mistake. I opened the door expecting either those kids or just one kid with a weapon or something. But these weren't little kids. Standing at my door were two people and both looked young, but their eyes gave them away. They were pitch black. I felt terrified again. I felt like putting my shotgun down and letting them in. I'm not sure why I felt that way. As I had the door open for those 3 to 4 seconds, the taller kid started to walk forward to come in. I kicked my door shut as hard as I could and I locked it. At this point, I heard them both crying and screaming in a strange, distorted, high-pitched way, followed by some banging on my door again. I went to check my back door just to make sure it was still locked. Thankfully, my back door was locked, and by the time I headed to my front door, they just stopped. I loaded my shotgun and opened the door expecting these things, but they were gone. I heard some footsteps and my neighbor was coming by. He heard some weird screams and came by to check on me. I stood there probably looking like death with a shotgun in my hand. I let him in and told him the entire event. He told me to call the cops, but I was positive they wouldn't believe me. I never called the cops. While that tends to be along the lines of many of the encounters with black-eyed kids, there is another one recounted in G. Michael Vassey's book, although with a twist. An individual who submitted their story under the initials B.I. recounted a story of receiving a knock on their door one night by two boys demanding to be let in to use the phone. All the same hallmarks: black eyes, robotic speech, demanding to be let in. B.I. then locked the door and ran to get their shotgun. When they returned, the boys were gone. But standing at the door this time was a young girl with very light hair. B.I. assumed the girl was with the boys and yelled at her to leave as well. The girl responded that B.I. didn't need to be afraid. The girl had no interest in coming inside. She only asked if the two boys had just been there. B.I. responded yes, and that they had just left. The young girl said not to worry. The boys wouldn't bother B.I. again. And before leaving, revealed fully white eyes. There are other accounts of people encountering white-eyed kids immediately after black-eyed kids, and it's led to some believe that white-eyed kids are a force for good. Although compared to the legend of black-eyed kids, white-eyed kids is still a relatively new phenomenon. Now, with all this emphasis on how you must not let the black-eyed kids in, you may be wondering, what would happen to someone if they were to let them in? The following story was published on weekandweird.com in 2016 from a woman unfortunate enough to have just done that. Let me start by saying that I know how hard this will all be to believe, but now that things have taken a turn for the worse, I started looking for stories similar to mine and found Weak and Weird. I feel like I should share this story with someone, and your website seems like the right place. I made the mistake of letting black-eyed kids inside, and now I'm worried that I might die because of it. I hope this will be a warning to everyone who is ever in the position to make the same mistake that I did. I live just outside of a rural town in Vermont. It's a tight-knit community where everyone knows one another, and people don't lock their doors at night. There has never been any need to. A little over a year ago, I woke up because I heard a loud banging at my front door. At the time, my husband and I lived in a small home on a dirt road just off the rural route into town. It was the middle of a snowstorm, and the nearby hills got very slippery in the snow, so I thought that someone might have been in an accident and broken down. It's happened before. When I looked out the window, I could see that our motion spotlight was on. I could see that there were footprints in the snow that had come from our road and into our driveway, but there was no car anywhere. The snow was still covering the road, and no one had driven on it for at least a couple of hours. Our front door was obscured from the window, but I could see that someone was standing there. I wasn't sure what to think, so I woke my husband up just to feel safer. While I was telling him what was going on, the banging on the door started again, and my husband went to answer it while I stood in the hallway. When he opened the door, there were two children standing in the snow looking toward the ground. They were a boy and a girl who could not have been more than 8 years old. They were dressed strangely and had odd haircuts. The girl's hair was very long and straight, and the boy had a dated haircut that looked almost like a bowl cut. They weren't dressed for winter, and my first thought was that they must have been Mennonite children. But as far as I know, there was never a large community of Mennonites near us. Thinking back on it, I know that my normal reaction to seeing children in a snowstorm would have been to rush them inside and bundle them up with some blankets and hot cocoa. But that's not how this felt. The children were very unnerving. They would not make eye contact, and when my husband asked them if everything was okay, they asked if they could come in. My husband looked at me like, "What do I do?" And I asked the kids where their parents were. "They'll be here soon," is all they said. It was around 2 o'clock in the morning at this point, so the only reasonable thought in my head was that there must have been an accident or these kids got lost. As much as my instincts told me not to bring them inside, I did it anyway. I went into the kitchen to make some hot cocoa while my husband took them into the living room. While I was fixing the kettle, I could hear my husband talking to the kids. He was asking them if they were okay, where they came from, how far they walked, if their parents' car was broken down, things like that. But they always answered, "Our parents will be here soon." They spoke in a sing-songy voice. They weren't afraid to be in a stranger's home at all. I started to notice that our cats, we had four, were all hiding except for Pigeon, who was in the kitchen with me. Normally, our cats are very curious and friendly, and we have to be careful that they don't run out the door when we leave. This time, none of them even tried to see who was here, which I thought was very strange. All of the hair on Pigeon's neck was standing up, and his tail was puffed up while he looked in the living room. When I bent down to pet him and see what was wrong, he hissed and started growling and backed up until he hid himself under the kitchen island. I have never seen him do that before. When I walked back into the living room, the kids were sitting on the couch, as still as can be, but my husband was holding his head in his hands. I asked him what was wrong, and he just said that he felt very dizzy all of a sudden, but that he was fine. I turned back to the children to give them their cocoa, but when they looked at me, I gasped. It took everything inside of me not to drop the mugs and run away. When they looked at me, their eyes were completely black. They had no whites, just giant black pupils. When they saw that I was scared, they stood up and asked if they could use the bathroom. I tried to be as composed as I could be and showed them down the hall. They went into the bathroom together, and I hurried back to my husband, asked him if he had seen their eyes. He had seen them too, and said that it looked like his brother's badly bruised eyes after a car accident. We were in the middle of talking about whose children they could be when my husband's nose started to bleed. He'd never had nosebleeds as long as I had known him. I just knew inside myself that this had something to do with the kids in the bathroom, and I started crying while I ran to get my husband some tissues. That's when the power went out. I heard my husband yell my name from the living room, and as I started to walk back through the hallway, I stopped dead in my tracks. The two children were standing at the end of the hallway. They weren't moving, and I have never been so scared in my whole life. They just stood there in the dark. After what felt like forever, the boys said, "Our parents are here." And they walked to the door, opened it, and walked out, leaving it wide open. My husband jumped up to go close it and almost fell over. I looked out the window and saw two men standing by a black car idling at the end of our driveway. The men looked like they were wearing black-colored suits and were very tall, at least 6 feet. When my husband waved at them, they just stared at us, got into the car, and drove off. Our power came on about half an hour later, but nothing was the same after that. Over the next few months, three of our cats went missing. We can only assume that they ran away somewhere and never came back, but the worst thing was coming home to find Pigeon in a puddle of blood on the living room floor. He looked like he had been vomiting blood. The vet told us that he had some kind of hemorrhage. After my husband's nosebleeds became a regular occurrence, we went to see a doctor. He didn't know what to make of it other than dry nasal passages, but my husband was diagnosed with an aggressive skin cancer. When the doctor asked us if he had used tanning beds, we both thought he was joking. But apparently this kind of melanoma is linked to overuse of indoor tanning. The doctors think he will recover, but don't understand how it got so bad so quickly. My husband has never worked an outdoor job and spends relatively little time in the sun. Since we let the black-eyed kids into our home, I've also suffered from regular dizzy spells and nosebleeds on a regular basis. I've had other issues, which I won't mention here, but trust me when I say that I am suddenly in the worst condition of my life, and no one can do anything about it. I know that all of this is because I let the black-eyed children into my home. We told everyone we could about the strange kids that showed up that night, but no one else saw them, and some laugh at how scared we were of the quote-unquote Mennonite kids, but we know what we saw. I wish my husband had never opened the door. Feel free to publish this as a warning to others about black-eyed kids. My advice would be to lock your doors, call the police, and wait for morning. Don't make the same mistake that I did. As you heard in that story, allowing a black-eyed kid into your home can have a very ill effect on your life. Could all their misfortune afterwards be purely coincidental? I suppose it could. But why take that chance should you yourself ever encounter one of these creatures? Speaking of which, what exactly are black-eyed children? One theory many believe is that they are some sort of demonic entity who want to steal your soul. It's also believed that they may have been regular children who themselves have become demonically possessed. Black eyes are the common indicator of possession. I'm sure you know that if you watch the show Supernatural. However, what appears to be the most common theory is that black-eyed kids are an alien-human hybrid, given their alien-like speech patterns as well as their appearance. Also in that last story, the kids were picked up by two very tall men in black suits, which gives off the impression that they are in cohorts with the men in black, which is a whole other topic that I don't have time to dive into here. But let's just say that they're not as fun as Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones portrayed them to be. And if you want to hear about them yourself, I would recommend checking out the three-part series Last Podcast on the Left did on the Men in Black. And those are episodes 323, 324, and 325 of Last Podcast on the Left. Or the final theory I'll share is that none of this is real and black-eyed kids are real kids being pranksters and the stories are nothing more than creepypasta to tell a Halloween. But come on, what would be the fun in that? Anyway, that about does it for this special Halloween edition of the Still Unknown podcast. I hope you enjoyed yourselves as much as I did doing this story. I have another special episode planned for next Monday. As you may know, the second volume of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix was released a week ago, and I again have planned a special episode to recap it where I once again will be joined by the ladies of the Resolved Mysteries podcast, so it should be a lot of fun. I always enjoy talking with them. I, of course, had Carlin and Eliza join me to discuss Volume 1 a few months back, and I was fortunate to do something with them for their Patreon as well. So it'll be a lot of fun, and I'm excited for you all to hear next week, because I know we have a lot of crossover with our listener crowd. So stay tuned for that next week, and in keeping with the spooky Halloween theme for this week, I wanted to end this episode by playing a clip from a podcast I recently came across, and I absolutely love, called Haunted Real Ghost Stories. It's hosted by Sarah Kelly and features stories of hauntings in Ireland. This clip is from Episode 1, The Cooning Ghost House. The Murphy family were over the moon when they moved into their new house in an isolated part of Cooning in County Fermanagh in Northern Ireland. They were beginning to put their own touches to the little stone cottage with the red metal roof when one night, when all the family were in bed or sitting by the fire, they heard movement in the attic space. After that, they were plagued by a violent poltergeist.
According to Bridget, it all began one dark, cold night not too long after they moved in, when she and the older girls were sitting by the fire. Suddenly, they heard loud footsteps coming from the ceiling, followed by a rush in the room. Then a tapping sound began on the wall behind them and slowly spread throughout the house. The youngest girls, whose bedroom was to the right of the kitchen, began to scream in terror. The noise around them grew louder, edged closer. The girls' hands turned white as they gripped the bedsheets in fear. The younger kids cried as they tried desperately to understand what was happening. The tapping continued all night and eventually faded with the dawn.
While that tends to be along the lines of many of the encounters with black-eyed kids, there is another one recounted in G. Michael Vassy's book, although with a twist. An individual bull... Oh, shit.